I think I'm having a moment. Another moment to relapse, so serotonin. But I see it from your side. I can't count it on my fingers. All the times you let me down. Say your peace and let it linger. Let the words dry out your mouth. I can feel the emotion when I walk into the room and you got me in focus.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, joined by co-host, Jeff.
Good after day to you, sir. Good time of day.
It's a wonderful time of day.
We record in the evenings, but I always think when someone listens to this, you know, I do most of my podcasts listening in the morning, so if I'm saying good evening, and my so,
yeah,
anyway.
Good day is a good call.
Good day to you, sir.
Good day to you. Before we get into what we watched this week, I'm going to plug the music. And the music this month is brought to you by the Chicago alternative pop punk band, The Fluorescents, with their song Roll the Dice. If you haven't given it a listen, be sure you give them a listen. We appreciate them allowing us to use their music here on our podcast. You can hit the show notes, get all the links to their social media accounts, give them a like, a follow, and a subscribe. They're doing big things. Jeff.
Hey.
What did we watch this week?
Well, it's Creature Feature Month here on the pod, you know, so one of us has to pick a fucking scary movie, and you just have to leave it up to me. So we watched The Thing from 1982, starring Kurt Russell, Keith David, Wilford Brimley, as well as Richard Masur.
Yeah.
Who sure. You probably didn't recognize, but was in a previous film of ours, Encino Man.
That's a good callback, but
yeah,
no.
I knew I recognized them. I had to look. I'm like, damn, this dude, you know, I've seen Encino Man about a billion times. So I was like, this dude looks so familiar.
Charles Hallahan, on the other hand, is a face that I recognize, but like an 80s staple, I think. I can't really tell you what else he's been in, other than I think he's been in everything that was filmed in the 80s. His face is just super recognizable if you've watched any 80s, maybe early 90s films.
Don't think we've seen any Kurt Russell films.
No.
Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
We got a lot of returning actors. Bone Tomahawk with Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley in Hard Target, and Keith David in Ass to Ass. Which, if you don't know, is that fucking piece of shit movie, Requiem for a Dream.
How do you feel
about the fact that Darren Aronofsky will probably get my worst movie of the year award two years in a row?
And the Darren Aronofsky worst film of the year award goes to
Darren Aronofsky. He's done it again, folks.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you'd seen this before.
It's been an extremely long time. We're talking decades since I think I saw it. I could not tell you how old I was. I distinctly remember some of the scenes in this film, but I could not tell you how the film ended. I couldn't tell you really the plot of the thing before watching this and without reading, you know, something here on the internet. But at one point in time, I believe I did see it. It's been so long that I might as well not have seen it.
Yeah, I've never seen it. However, it is legendary. And I think that if I were to tell my co-host over on Chronologically that I've never seen The Thing, I think he might quit on me. And it is a film that I believe Eric loves that I just haven't gotten around to. And it is in my wheelhouse.
But,
so,
all right, it's directed by John Carpenter, all right?
Legendary,
scary movie guy. I didn't really get any real scary vibes here, you know, from this film.
Okay, what do you feel was missing then from it being scary?
I guess, and it's weird, is because scary films have evolved over time, right? What we consider scary now, jump scares, maybe psychological, you know, horror type stuff. I think back in the 70s and 80s, films were considered scary because they had these weird things in them. And the practical effects of these types of movies. What's that other one we watched last year? The vampire.
Space vampires?
Yeah.
What the hell was that called?
I don't
fucking Life Force.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's still in my brain. Now, he's not only directed scary, he's directed a lot of action films, a lot of which with Kurt Russell. Escape from New York,
Escape from
Los Angeles. There was something else. He did They Live, which stars wrestling legend Rowdy Roddy Piper. One day I got to get to that. But most notably, John Carpenter is known for Halloween.
Yeah. And so that's a good segue into what I'm talking about as far as like scary, like Halloween films. Some of the greatest scary films of all time. And it's because they had this ominous figure and the score of, you know, the film, the music, what's his face? Michael Myers, he has his own fucking soundtrack, right?
Right.
And so it just, I think there was elements of that missing here is because, yeah, this creature in this film, this alien, is very fucked up looking.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just scenes where you're just like, what the fuck?
This is, all right, so scary, yeah. I don't think I was scared really at any point. So I can agree with that. However, there were several points where I was uncomfortable and like borderline grossed out. And I don't really get grossed out in horror movies, but this monster is so nasty. It's so goopy, and it has like all kinds of arms and legs, and it's just the wildest monster you've ever seen.
Yeah.
In any film, like you can't describe it either. It's just different.
That's some of like I think why this film ends up being so iconic is because it was so when this movie was made, early 80s, you know, nothing like that had ever been done.
It's the practical effects.
Right.
Showcase to end all showcases.
Yeah.
I think
100%. Sure. I think that's what makes the film and holds the film together essentially is that you have this cast and they're in Antarctica. And you know, they're all essentially scheming against each other because they don't know who, you know, who's real and who's not. But at every turn, you've got some practical effect that is just bonkers. And I think that's what holds it together, in my opinion, because it's not scary. Like, there's no, you never see the creature, like, stalking these
yeah,
people,
there's,
right?
Yeah, I agree. There's not a lot of ominous, like you said, the stuff in the shadows. There's not a lot of, like, leading up to tension. There is one point where they're doing the test with the hot poker where you know something's going to happen and it finally
does.
That's
psychological type shit.
That
type shit, but
did get me jump scare wise when it popped out of the thing. I was like, whoa, shit. I didn't expect it to kind of go down the way it did. So, and I agree. I think the movie is known pretty much just for its practical effects and just how insanely good they are. And unlike a lot of CG, this just still holds up. It's nasty.
All right. So I don't know if it holds up.
Okay. I need you to point out where it doesn't.
Well, I mean, it's very rubbery.
It's also gooey.
It is very gooey. I mean, it's for early 80s. I mean, it's fucking phenomenal, right? You've got this creature.
But don't you think it's nice? Like, here's the thing. With CG, you know there's nothing there.
Sure.
And to me, it takes a little extra leap of suspension of disbelief. Whereas when he's doing the defibrillator and his hands go in the guy's gut and then it chomps shut, all that stuff is actually there on screen happening. And it just adds an element.
I think that was the wildest scene for me.
Oh, it was awesome, right?
His chest like bites his arms off. And
that's what's cool about the monster is like, that it doesn't have any set anatomy, right? Like, you can picture a xenomorph in your head, and you know exactly what it looks like. And Alien is a great movie, right?
Right, yeah. But all right, so
but this thing doesn't have any sort of set form. It's just nasty.
Yeah, and Alien's a good reference because that is a scary fucking film.
And this, you know, this movie reminds me a lot of Aliens, mostly because of you've got a crew in a remote place dealing with a monster. And so in that way, they're very similar. Alien is a lot more of a slow burn though.
Yeah, but it's a creature, you know, where it stalks, you know, stalks its prey, type film. And, you know, we get a lot of, you know, bumps and like loud bangs in that film.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Alien or Aliens?
Ooh. See, those are two of my favorite movies because they're vastly different from each other, right?
Yeah.
You know, Alien is scary. It's your scary movie. Aliens is your action.
Bill Paxton, both, friend of the pod.
Both very phenomenal movies, but they're so different. I don't think it's fair to
let
pick
me repeat
one over
the question.
Other.
Alien or Aliens?
Okay, I'm gonna go with Aliens.
You have made a wise decision, my friend. I love Alien, but Aliens is the shit.
Yeah, no, vastly entertaining, just off the walls, bonkers. Alien is good. Like, Alien is good.
It's great.
It's not up to on the entertainment level of Aliens. Anyways, that was a good question.
Yeah.
Too
bad you're trying not to answer it.
All right. I didn't realize Keith David was in this film.
Oh my God, I love Keith David. Don't you? When he's on screen, just in any capacity, except for Ass to Ass. You just love the guy. Like, there were two people I didn't want to die in this movie. It was Keith David and Kurt Russell, right?
Right.
Everyone else could bite the big one. I don't care. But I needed Keith David to make it through the film.
He does, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
The only two survivors.
Right.
Well, we think, right? So maybe we don't want to jump to the end just yet, but I mean, it is an open-ended ending, right? We don't know.
Yeah, you know, as when the movie starts and the helicopter crew is firing after this wolf, I'm like, the fuck are they firing at this wolf for?
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and then I'm like, it's got to be the monster, right?
Right, right. And then it's Richard Masur that is
he's the dog guy.
No, okay. Who's the other? Who's the guy? The sheriff guy.
Sheriff.
Oh, he's like the
sheriff.
No, but he's the guy with the pistol at the beginning. He shoots the guy in the eyeball.
It might have been.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Oh! You mean the Gary, sure. Donald Moffat, okay. The guy with the eyebrows.
Donald
like, he
Moffitt.
Has really big eyebrows.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's that guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Donald Moffat. Anyways, you know, I thought it was a good opening sequence that kind of sets the the tone a little bit, because you're like, wait, what the fuck are they trying to kill this dog for? And then, you know, helicopter lands and the guy gets out and he starts shooting at everybody, and they're just like, what the fuck? And I just, along the way, there's some decisions that are made in for like story wise.
Okay.
That's, I'm just like, wait a minute, why are they fucking doing that? Like when Wilford Brimley is on the computer and he's playing Space Invaders with the DNA or whatever the fuck.
Okay.
whatever that like whole sequence was meant to be on the computer, where it showed the alien, I guess, assuming whatever
right.
DNA.
The jargon.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was weird exposition. And then he runs some like equation in the computer, and it's like 27 million people will die, and I'm like, what? How did that computer can barely hold any information?
I didn't even recognize the scene or know it was in the film, because I didn't care, right? I think that's something that is I've noticed about myself as a viewer. I tend, like, when I'm watching something like this, I don't care about all the ancillary shit. I don't really care where the alien came from.
Yeah.
I just want to watch Kurt Russell fight an alien. And it was funny.
And Kurt Russell's hair in this film is magnificent.
I was going to ask, on a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, it's a fucking 11, bro.
Yeah. Best hair in cinema. Right? If you put his hair on Van Damme's ass, everyone will just faint from the beauty. It's incredible.
I'm gonna go to Chat GPT and tell it to make me a image of
Kurt Russell's hair from The Thing on Van Damme's ass. What was AI I talking about? I got sidetracked
that, right?
by this beautiful coif.
And then he puts on a fucking cowboy hat, bro.
Isn't he a badass? Like, is Kurt Russell not one of the great cinema badasses?
No, I think he is kind of the last essential cowboy of cinema, really. When I say kind of the last cowboy of cinema, kind of the last badass, like him and Tom Cruise are kind of in the same, but he's older than Tom Cruise, I think.
But I'm a Tom Cruise fan, but there's something about Kurt Russell's gravitas, if I might use a word that I don't know the meaning of, that he just
Root
handles
word of
himself
gravity.
So great, right? Like you just, and in this movie, he's that sort of commanding leader. And you just kind of get behind him. And then, like, in Tombstone, when he's playing Wyatt Earp, he just is so steady. And there's just something about Kurt Russell that I love in these movies that he's in, that he's just so cool and calm and collected. Even when shit's going crazy and he is kind of losing it a little bit, he's still in his right mind. He's still making those right decisions. Or at least you believe he is, because he does it with such authority. And I just love that about Kurt Russell movies.
Well, and I think, you know, him as an icon, a movie icon, when this movie came out, he hadn't done Escape from New York. Here's a question for you. Escape from New York or Escape from Los Angeles?
I've never watched either of them in their entirety.
Whoa. Okay.
Carpenter chronologically coming soon.
Mentally noted. Anyways.
No, I mean, I don't know. That's the sort of shit I love, right? You know, I don't know. I just never got around to them. And, you know,
I mean,
I'm
they're
on board.
They're great. I mean, they're just great action movies, right?
Yeah.
So his character of Snake Plissken, and he's just, I mean, he is this bad, he's this, like, talking about gravitas. Every scene he's in those films, everything's just sucked into him, right? He carries, in most films he's in, he carries the film, right?
Yeah. Did you watch his Santa Claus movie?
Yeah, they're fucking good, bro.
I want to watch him because he makes a cool Santa Claus. Oh, Executive Decision, where that piece of shit dies right off the rip.
R.I.P. Seagal.
Yeah, fuck Seagal.
But no, the fucking Santa Claus movies that Netflix did with him, they're fucking good. And he makes a fucking badass Santa Claus.
Yeah, his hair, again, in the Santa Claus movie.
Great.
Looking good.
It's fucking phenomenal. But here I think he's a little bit toned down a little in as far as the character goes. He's not overly badass, even though, like, throughout the film he kind of takes on that mantra. And then I thought it was very good writing for his character and good acting on his part, that there are certain times you're like, oh, fuck, this dude's lost it. He's gone nuts. Everybody else is correct and he's wrong. And like when he's doing the whole thing with the wire and the blood, you're just in like, and they're calling him, they're like, oh, look at you, you fucking murderer. And he's like, I don't give a fuck about you.
Hey, but dude made a move on him though.
Right.
He fucked up.
So yeah, right. So
you don't move on Kurt Russell. What is he thinking?
And that's another bonkers ass scene with practical effects when that shit comes out the blood.
Well, then when the other guy, you find out which one of them, there are three dudes tied up on the couch, and then the one on the end turns out to be one of the monsters, and he starts melting and queer. It's gross. this is a nasty movie, man. It's gross.
And I go back to it. That's really what makes it for me is the practical effects. Is because I think without it, and you're just talking about a story of these dudes kind of losing. And there's, you know, the alien set piece, but I think without the practical effects, this is just another kind of psychological thriller.
Because and I'll point back to CG. If you replace this shit with a CG monster, I don't care. And it doesn't matter how awesome it looks in CG, how badass it looks. Like, there have been great CG monsters. Right. But the fact that it's practical is what puts it over the top. Right? Yeah. Because it becomes such a character in the movie of what sort of weird shit you're going to see. And a big bloody CG mess to me doesn't do anything. It just won't. It doesn't get the same visceral reaction that I got watching. There's the scene where I think it's Wilford Brimley or maybe the other doctor is reaching into the monster and pulling out weird stuff when he's doing the autopsy. Oh, yeah. And it's just nasty. Like, almost had to turn away. And that doesn't happen to me. And really any other movie, especially with that CG monsters, I don't care. But this, when it's in the dog kennel and it's killing the dogs and shooting hoses everywhere. And then like a part of it opens and then like a flowery, weird, gross thing comes. It just gets nastier and nastier. And I'm just like, oh, this is the best thing I've seen. It's just so gross, though. Like, it makes me feel conflicted is how effective the special effects are. I'm just like,
well, and I think that it's a testament to, I don't really know if this was a Carpenter thing, or it's got to be a Carpenter thing, but just the team he put around him to make this film, that he trusted somebody. Maybe it was himself, I don't know, but he trusted somebody to put this creature idea in this film, and reaped all the reward from it. Is because it is so just fucking, like you said, gross and weird and like stuff that had never been seen on film before, right? Especially with, actors like Kurt Russell and Wilford Brimley at the time.
Keith David, bitch.
Well, I don't, you know, he's young in this movie, so I don't know what kind of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Established career he had up to this point, but Wilford Brimley certainly was a household name.
I don't know if he had diabetes yet, but
he probably did.
It seems like he was born with diabetes. Is that possible?
You can be born with it, yes.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, I take that back. I apologize.
It's just a function of your fucking pancreas not working right.
I know, but I didn't. You know, that's my ignorance coming through.
But anyways, so yeah, I think this movie deserves a lot of credit for.
Oh, this is real early in Keith Davidson's career.
Yeah,
super early. Like, right. He did a TV movie, a video. He was an uncredited extra in a movie called Disco Godfather.
Oh yeah.
So,
seen that one before? I haven't seen that one before.
No, I didn't think so. But
yeah. So John Carpenter, even though he's made a lot of movies before this, the level of practical effects here is just kind of just off the charts and, you know, in the stratosphere for the time. And it really, I think, probably launched a lot of other ideas for films where these filmmakers are like, how do I tell this story? And then they go and see The Thing and they're like, oh, okay, I got an idea.
Let's make some nasty shit.
Right. And so as a pioneer, John Carpenter probably launched a shit ton of other people's careers without even knowing it. And that's really cool. That's a really cool thought coming out of this movie is that he can be directly responsible for this practical effects. What is this movie? 81? 82.
Yeah.
But like he can be kind of just directly responsible for the entire 80s of practical effects.
Now, I don't know if he was the artist that did these. The directors usually aren't. There's usually someone who's some sort of legend. I'm going to Google it, but
he had to trust whoever it was to be like, "Hey man, this is the shit. Let's put this in the movie."
So, and the guy's name is Rob Botten. Reputation grew when he worked with John Carpenter on The Thing. Botten worked on The Thing for 7 days a week, including late nights for a year and 5 weeks straight, producing every creature effect with the exception of the transformed dog, which was partially done by Stan Winston. So Rob Botten is the fucking hero in this movie.
Yeah, but yes, Rob Botten is the ideal. He is the brains behind.
He's the hands, you know, buddy. He's the guy who makes the monster.
Yeah, yeah. But it's John Carpenter who reaps the reward from it, right?
Great. No one's ever heard of John Botten.
Right. I had never heard of that dude before you just read me his bio.
Right.
But
got a hell of a RoboCop, Total Recall, favorite film of the podcast here, Basic Instinct. He worked on that. Fight Club, Seven. Guy's got a reputation. You know,
another film with a ton of practical effects. Total Recall. The original Total Recall.
Yeah,
that was
man.
A great.
Three
film
boobs, movie. The face yeah. thing.
Hell yeah, let's go. Three boobs. That's all you need, man. Practical effects.
Rob Botten chronologically. I add this to the list. This motherfucker got a damn.
No, it's I think that's a really cool thing that I don't think we've really ever talked about is how much of a pioneer these directors can be when they utilize some unknown, but rarely explored avenue like practical effects, and then seeing the growth and the evolution of those practical effects through the decade. Like, all right, so we, you know, this is 82, and then we watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was, 89?
Yes.
And you see the level of practical effects between those two movies. And, you know, I'm sure whoever made the turtle figures, or I don't even know what to call them, but the practical effects they used for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, I'm sure somebody on that crew said, I saw the thing once, and I said, I got an idea. And they made a fucking turtle that talked with, like, weird, creepy lips and tongues and teeth.
Either
and shit.
That or they went to turtle porn, which is one of your favorites.
Ah!
But
tabs open, baby.
Yeah. So, it's nasty. It's gross. What did you think of the arc with Wilford Brimley?
I don't know.
Like, so he goes crazy.
Right.
And I'm guessing at that point the monsters got him. And then they take him and they put him in the shack. And yeah. Then later they go in the shack. He's not there. And
he's dug his way to...
How the fuck? Like, I know this alien is different than us. But we watch it, and most of the time, it's just a damn mess of arms and guts.
Right.
How did it dig out that big-ass tunnel?
Well, I mean, remember the guy that originally got burned after the thing, I guess, morphed into him?
Yeah.
And he had, like, these big claw hands?
Yeah.
I guess
ain't
maybe, like...
shit with those hands.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I just thought it was, know, like, damn, he's been busy.
It's, you know, little shit like that, that kind of, you know, is, once you talk about it, it's like, oh, that's kind of glaring.
So my thing is, one thing about this I could have done without is the spaceships.
Yeah.
Right? I just don't think I needed to know that much about the origin. Like, I didn't need the big spaceship or the little spaceship. I just kind of was fine sort of going back to Alien with this thing just killing shit because it's a monster. Right.
And I actually think that might have been and I'm just speculating here, but might have been a reason why they, John Carpenter and this guy, Bill Lancaster and John Campbell, who wrote it, maybe explored that option, is because they didn't want the comparison to maybe Alien.
But here's the thing for me. What is scarier to you? Some crazy ass creature from outer space, or one that's actually native to our world?
Yeah, I mean, right. I get what you're saying.
I'm just saying, I think it's a little scarier that this thing's living up in the fucking ice. And, oh, shit, you know, back maybe in 82, they weren't as worried about global warming. But what if you made this movie again and, like, it's global warming, the ice caps are melting, and, oh, the fucking thing is back.
Right.
I don't know. That's scarier to me.
Right. You're just very conscious about what's going on in the planet. But there is something to be said for how do we relate to the alien. Is, you know, did it come here seeking something? Did it come here? Did it crash here? You know, was it just flying by the planet and something happened and it just crashed? I think there's a natural responsibility to explain that type of shit in film. And we're speculating here, but it just seems like they wanted there to be a, like, an actual reason this thing was here.
So they find over at the other camp or whatever, that ice coffin. And I think that was enough, right? These guys fucking found this thing. And there's this ice coffin, and you don't really know what's happening. And I'm like, to me, when it comes to, like, horror, I think so much of his less is more, with exception of special effects in this film. Right. Like, because everything, you get to see everything on the screen. So maybe we need to reel in the mystery then on the exposition side, you know, because so much, like, great horror is what you don't see. And since you get to see all the gooey details, maybe they rein that in. For me, it's a minor critique. It's not honestly a big deal one way or the other. But I just think the mystery to me is a little more effective than overly explaining things. Like, you know, John Wick 1,
Yeah.
Where there's this society, and we don't really know all the details to all these rules. And but then the movies just keep explaining shit, and then it just gets convoluted and stupid. That's, I kind of like the mystery of it a little more.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't bat an eye about the whole spaceship thing. And when they go down, and the guy, you know, Wilford Brimley has dug himself to China, and
a hell of a dicker. I if it grows a shovel arm, even with a shovel arm, where does that? Where did he do with the rest of the ice? You know, when you dig a hole,
it melted
into what? How did it melt?
Water. I don't know, man.
But when you melt it, it expands. It would take up more space.
Yep.
I'm just saying. Maybe he ate it.
We found the plot hole.
Okay, no, he ate it, and then when he got out, he peed. Okay, I figured it out.
Okay, that's what we're going with.
Yeah. So Wilford, we need that scene in the movie, John Carpenter, where Wilford Brimley eats his way out of the house and then goes into the woods and pees. Well, there's no woods. But then he writes his name in the snow. John Carpenter, I'm making your movie better for you, buddy.
And I thought the whole scene where he's going crazy and he's chopping things up with an axe and everybody's out on the outside.
I like that scene, man, because at first you're not sure how serious he is. But then Keith David's like, hey, buddy, you don't want to do this. And then he just opens fire on Keith David right away.
You know, the best scene in the entire fucking movie is him running out of bullets. And then the camera is showing him throw the revolver.
Oh, yeah.
And then it shows him throwing at the camera. And then it edits to it looking at the door frame and the gun hitting the wall. It's ridiculous.
It's the most
ridiculous scene in the entire movie. It's because, like, why do I need to see him throw the gun at the doorway and hit the wall?
Hey, I liked it.
anyways, I mean, what else is there to say about this movie?
This movie's nasty, man. It's nasty, but it's so good. Like, there's no other movie like it. You'll never see a better movie with better practical effects. I don't think. The thing is this is peak, right? You know, like, I think if someone went to make a movie with practical effects today, I don't know that they could even compete, you know? That's.
Well, there's a certain level of camp that it was not considered camp for 1982. However, I think it would be considered kind of campy now, looking back at some of the practical effects here and some of the scenes where this thing is morphing and doing its thing. I just don't think movies like this are made today, right?
Well, they definitely aren't.
No, but like, they're not made to showcase effects like this.
They are, like, but it's CG.
No, right. I'm talking about practical effects. This movie was made, I believe, to showcase, like, cutting-edge practical effect type shit in 1982, and it accomplished its goal in 1982. I just don't think there's films being made today that are showcasing any type of practical effects. And if a movie is showcasing any effects, like you said, it's CG, and it's not the same.
So, do you recommend The Thing from 1982? I gotta say that, because there's like two other versions out there.
It's weird to think about recommending something solely off of its delivery of effects, right?
Let's rein this in again. I'm gonna try one more time to pull a Basic Instinct here.
Yeah,
it is Creature Feature Month,
right?
Here on the pod, what creature is gonna top this shit? And I can honestly say it ain't the critters. I mean, it ain't critters.
Okay, good to know. Duly noted.
And I love critters, but it ain't critters.
But we're watching Critters 2.
Oh, my God. We're watching the
movie. Is it Critters 2?
I don't know. They're different movies. Critters 2 is like a comedy, man. Critters 2 is closer to Chucky than it is Mike Myers. Like, I would say Chucky to Mike Myers is as Critters is to The Thing.
Yeah. Well, I almost feel like I have to recommend it because
you don't have to do anything.
No. But I'm telling you, I'm talking you through my thought process.
Okay.
I feel like this movie needs to be seen is because I feel, and I believe, it was so vitally important to cinema at the time that everybody should watch this film at some point in time. Especially if you're a movie nerd like us, and you know, you just enjoy the lore of these type of things. And like the 80s and early 90s were rife with movies filled with practical effects, especially creature fucking films, right? And so I'm gonna recommend it.
You're damn right.
I'm gonna recommend it solely because of the effects in this film.
I would argue there's no better creature feature. I mean, this is some nasty shit. This is nasty. You gotta watch it. It's gross.
So do you recommend
it? Hell yeah. This shit's nasty. What a 180 that would be. Oh, Mark, I talked him into it. Nice. And then I'm like, no, thanks. No, this is good. This is great. And I still, and you are putting a lot on the effects, rightly so, but I still think you get Kurt Russell and Keith David and a cast, and I don't want to cut the rest of the cast that short because even the supporting cast is still pretty good, you know? Like, there isn't, they're all distinct characters. I mean, they're not fully fleshed out. It is a horror movie after all, but they all have traits, right? You got the guy on skates who's the cook. And then you got the dog guy, and then you got Windows, who just falls asleep when he should be doing his damn job. You know, I really like this. This is great. And the effects do put it over the top. I mean, what everyone says about this movie is true.
All right. So there you go. What are we watching next week?
Well, fun's fucking over, man. We got to watch Lamb. From 2021, an A24 film. I think it's a foreign film, too, so we got to read, which is bullshit. It stars Naomi Rapace, Hilmer.
You've seen her before.
These aren't even letters. Hilmer Snare.
That's a fake alphabet.
I'm not looking forward to this shit.
What is it? Is it streaming?
It's on Paramount Plus with Showtime. Okay. It's on Showtime. So if you have Showtime or the premium version of Paramount Plus, it's there.
Listen,
this is
going to
be a
get
it over movie. I'm watching this shit right away just to get it done because
I can't wait. I cannot wait to get your thoughts on Lamb.
It's going
to
make Critters 2 so much sweeter. I might come over early. We might watch Critters 1.
Let's fucking go. Whole day of creature features.
Dude, a Critters double feature for Halloween? Fuck yeah. Are you kidding me?
Anyways, we're going to watch Lamb next week. But if you want to get at the podcast, you can find us on all your favorite social media platforms. We're at Movie Draft House. We're on Twitter. We're on TikTok, Instagram. Here on YouTube, as you're watching us, be sure to hit the subscribe button when it pops up so you don't miss any future content. The episodes will drop weekly on every Thursday.
Yeah. And then you get those 5-minute reviews. You get about 83 from Mark. You get 2 from me. What more do you want?
Hey, you're catching up.
I did back-to-back ones because I watched a fair movie and then I finally watched a good movie.
You know what's another phrase for back-to-back?
Ass to ass.
Ass to ass.
That's right. A good callback, sir.
Anyways, if you want to get at Jeff on Twitter and let him know that, hey, man, you know, Babe the Pig was a practical effect.
Oh, are we calling that a creature feature?
Huh? We could. It fit the bill.
No, if you picked Babe for creature feature month in October, I wouldn't be as mad because Babe's an amazing film. I love Babe.
Get at Jeff at Podcast by Jeff.
And if you want to make Mark pick Babe, go to I Heard You Like It on Twitter. We got to watch Babe at some point.
Can we do Pig Month?
Well, we already watched Pig. How many Pig movies are there? We do Babe and Charlotte's Web and Babe 2. I don't think we can do Pig Month. Maybe Farm Month.
Farm Month. That's it.
All right.
Old McDonald Month.
Old McDonald Month. Farm Month. Coming soon to a shitty podcast near you. Anyway, you can find Mark at I Heard You Liked.
Jeff, you got any words of wisdom?
No, I do not. We'll see you next week.
You and I fall on opposite sides. Now we're